Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Hey everyone, welcome to the RAN CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella, and today I have a special guest, the man, the myth, the legend, Adam Labar. Adam is a veteran. He worked with us on the SkillBridge program, and he has about $10 million invested passively in deals, and then he's actively a part of $10 million in real estate as well. Welcome to the show, Adam. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic, Mike. Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone kind of has their crazy start in real estate. And I think you investing in your first deal, we're talking offline, is a very interesting, not traditional path. And I think it'd be a ton of value to our listeners if you kind of highlight how you got started in commercial real estate.
All right. Yeah. So it was a long path. I spent about 3 or 4 years in just straight education, trying to figure out what I wanted to do and understand real estate. And I finally, I guess it was about 5 years ago now, maybe 6 years ago, something like that, got into the Wheelbarrow Profits program, which was awesome. And I was found around like-minded, like-hearted folks that were looking to do it. And I finally bought my first property, which was a 62-unit apartment. And I was living out in Japan at the time. Cause I was my wife and I being Air Force folks, that's where the government decided to have us. So I was out there, and just timing wise, that's where I managed to make my first purchase, was a 62-unit property again out in, the property was in Tennessee. I was living in Japan, partners in Tennessee and Florida and a couple other places. So it was a very interesting first deal, and it was a huge value add deal as well. So, it was an interesting, not sure I'd recommend it to everybody as their first deal, but it was definitely educational.
But Adam, you couldn't drive the deal, and you couldn't do this, and you couldn't do that. So how in the hell could you have done it from Japan?
You know, I love the sarcasm in your voice there, because that, like, everybody loves to say, like, I can't do this. And well, I mean, the real estate's just not good in my backyard, or that, you know, they're just that, the, like, come on, excuses are excuses. You can come up with whatever you want. Like, I could have easily said, well, I guess I'll spend the next few years since I'm out here in Japan just learning more. And no, I didn't. I jumped in that deal. I think I was a part of 3 different deals while living in Japan. So it's one of those things that you can do it from anywhere. Sure, I had to spend a little bit of extra money when it was time to walk the property. I flew out. I had a couple of partners who had already walked the property to make sure everything was good. And we knew we were taking it down before I flew out there. But I wanted to see the property myself, and I went and took a look at it, walked around it, checked things out. And it's one of those things that if you want to make it happen, you will. If you want to make excuses, you will. And that's just kind of the way it went.
Yeah. And I think it's a very underrated point in the fact of understanding that it's the partnership first. I think when people start in single families, it's I can do this. I can invest my money. I can manage it. And then you're 3 years in, you're like, oh my God, I have so many headaches and pain points and this and that. So I think the biggest foundational piece is putting yourself with like the like-minded individuals to understand, but also when you surround yourself with that, you know what a good deal happens, and you know good partners. And obviously you don't know until you invest with them. But I think being surrounded in that group community aspect made it very easy to invest with when push came to shove. Is that probably true?
No, it's absolutely true. You don't like, and it's almost a dead horse at this point, but it's a team sport. Every time you listen to a podcast, they're like, yeah, real estate's a team sport, but it really is. Like, if it was not for the team, I would not have been able to take down the deals. If it wasn't for getting involved in a group that fostered that type of relationship, then it wouldn't have happened. So it is one of those things that, you know, finding the right team, finding the right partners makes a huge difference. And that's whether you're an active investor or a passive investor, you need to find the right team, the right partners to be able to take a deal down and get through what you need.
Yeah. What were some of the things that you looked for in a partnership? Because I think a lot of people, like you said, as cliche as it is, it's the relationships and this and that. Yeah. What attracted you to your partners?
We were all in the same community. So I knew the kind of people they were, the kind of vetting that was done, to get people in there. And, you know, I got on a lot of phone calls with folks trying to really learn who they were, trying to understand who they were, I saw how they interacted inside of the community. And, you know, get their enthusiasm for what we were doing. And we were all really just excited about the deal and making sure that we were going. I would say that definitely, I probably jumped in a little sooner than I should have. Very pleased with my partners, but knowing more about your partners, like this is a long-term relationship, right? I mean, you're, you know, you want to date a girl before you get married to her. Dating is a good thing. Get to know the people, get on phone calls with them, understand who they are, understand what their long-term goals are. You know, we all had the same long-term goals with the property, how we wanted to flip it, where we wanted to go with it, how, you know, how, what trajectory we wanted with the property. So it all made sense for who we were, and tackling the deal. So it's definitely something that's, do your property diligence on the people, just like you would on the property. You know, if you are the type of person who wants to, you just want to take this fix and flip and you just completely be done with it in a year and a half after the flip is done, charge as many fees as you can to make the NOI skyrocket and then sell it as a high price as you can and be done. That's one route to take. You don't want a partner who says, no, I want to hold on to this for 10 years. I want to be able to make this the type of community that my, you know, all of my family can want to live in. And like, it just, there's a different dynamic. So just understanding, not that one is right and one is wrong, it's just knowing what your partners are all looking for in the investment as well.
Yeah, I think having the same long-term vision, and I've had a lot of talks with investors and some of them are like, hey, your vision is too long. Some people mm-hmm. is like, use debt and that's too risky for my type of investment. And there's no wrong way, but like you said, I think it's important to date, have the same long-term vision, but also have even more fundamentals, the same character traits, like loyal, you know,
yeah.
Like, would I trust my person with a wallet, my wallet in the kitchen table and not have to count the cash and stuff like that. And it's cliche, but like you said, it's because people fall in love with real estate for the deal and the numbers and the returns. But your team is also the same counterpoint that you could lose all of your money with that investment. So it's important you have the same long-term vision, but the character traits as well. And then another thing too is why the partnership, but also the market. Being in Japan, obviously not from Tennessee, you may have driven it before, but like, how did you get comfortable being in Japan when investing in Tennessee?
So for me, it all comes down to analysis. Do the numbers make sense? Does the area make sense? It was up in the Tri-Cities in Northeast, Tennessee. So, you know, the growth was there. The market was there. It was looking good. I don't look for a property that is going to be, you know, hey, we're going to, increase the value of this property just by the fact that it's, you know, New York City. No. I want cash flow. B, I want to make sure that we're doing it right by increasing the NOI the way we should be doing it and all that. And that market supported that type of stuff. So the deal was actually already found by somebody in the community and they came to me asking if I wanted to partner up on it. So now I've got to do some due diligence on the property, the market, because I wasn't looking necessarily in that area. But it doesn't mean it's a bad area. I just had to do the research and understand if it made sense. So, you know, if you're not the numbers person, you need to be for certain things like that, right? You've got to dig into it and understand like, where's the population? What's the net migration? Where are we at with, you know, the average household income? Where are we at with how much houses are selling for in the area? Just understanding what that market brings and whether or not it's going to produce a good property for you.
Yeah. And I think it's a good point because I was talking to an investor this past weekend and he's like, hey, what do you think about this market? And I was like, well, for me, I wouldn't invest in this market because the fundamentals, like the people's population stagnant. It just reminded me of Detroit, to be completely honest. Like I love Detroit, but it's not one where I'd be like, oh, I'm going to take investor money and go there. Right.
Yep.
So I always look at it as start with the market, the submarket, then the property, then the financials, because you can get to a lot of no's and a lot of red flags. But if you see a 20 IRR and work backwards, you're like justifying the market and the property yeah. and this. And that's how you buy a 1960s property that has all those plumbing issues in a bad area. And it's just like, oh boy, watch out. So yeah. I think it's super important that, you know, vetting the market, you know, like you said, the median household income, crime rates, population growth, those are all very key factors when looking at markets. And then obviously too, you vetted your partners. I think those are very like really strong points. I think the last thing for this deal, because you said you started it, you probably jumped in a little too early. So what were kind of your learning lessons or things you would have done differently when this deal? Because you said you were pleased with the partners in the deal, but what would you have potentially done differently, especially being in Japan?
Yeah. So I would say the Japan part probably didn't, I wouldn't have changed anything for me. So it's one of those things that, yeah, I mean, if you live in South Carolina and you want to invest in South Dakota, it's still going to take you, like, you're not going to be able to drive the property tonight. Like, you're going to have to get on a plane. You have to go through the process. So it's, honestly, that level of distance doesn't change as much. It changes a lot mentally, but in practicality, it doesn't change that much physically. I would say that I would not have bitten off a $1.5 million like $50,000 a door renovation for my very first property. Probably wouldn't have done that if I would do it all over again. Now, I mean, I learned 50. Wow. So it's one of those things that's, you learn a ton, right? And it makes sense to get things done. And I was able to do a lot in the deal and I learned a lot from it, but probably it's one of those deals. I think I've told you in the past, like, you either learn so much from it that you'd never want to leave real estate again. And you're like, I can't wait to use this. Or you run so far away from real estate that you never want to touch it again, because it was, there was a lot involved in that deal. And thankfully I'd already gotten involved in a couple other deals before, you know, we ran into some stuff and got through that. But, it was a lot. So I would recommend not going with, that large of a, value add, your very first deal.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, I was talking to the Jake and Gino students, is like, everything's a stepping stone. Like, my first deal, I hate my story because I showed up to Veranda and we got a deal under contract the first month. And I was like, not even a major point in this, but I literally was like, I did the lease audit. And then as we went through, I was like doing the weekly pulses and making sure we were good there, and like incrementally going on and on and on of like stepping stones. So then by the time, like, this year, we have identified a deal, I've done all the due diligence, and then we close the 36 unit. So it's just like the 0 to 100, like, oh, my first at bat, I'm getting 100 units the first at bat. Very not likely. It can happen, yeah. But the likelihood of that and that going well is not very high. So I think that's, in the Instagrammable world that we live in, I think that's very honest and true advice that I would highly recommend to everyone listening. Like, hey, it's okay to get a 20 unit. I started with single family, and then I realized, like, this is a lot of work and I don't want to do that much and really specialize.
It's still okay to get a 20 unit. Even after having hundreds of units, I still would be fine buying a 20 unit. I don't have any issues with that.
Yeah, exactly.
And to correct my math earlier, 50 was a bit of an exaggeration. It's somewhere between 35 and 40 a door, somewhere around there, that we put into it. So, I mean, it's still a ridiculous amount of money, but
yeah, that's still a lot. I mean, we're doing, given the market cycle, we're looking at like 5 to 7. I mean, anything more than that, I mean, our biggest, like, we did a 48 unit, we're renovating, turning into 2 units. We had the bandwidth locally here that we knew we could, it's probably like 10 grand a door, but it was like paint, flooring, paint, flooring and appliances. And we just ran through because it was vacant and we added 2 more units. So you just got to really have the team behind you to make sure you're fully capable.
Yep. Completely agreed. Yeah. That's one thing that, again, because I started with that type of deal, I didn't have that full understanding of the team on the ground with the contractors. We didn't have all of that. And the business plan didn't work out fully as planned, but that was all, it's one of those things that's, you know, if you let one thing slow you down, then you're going to let everything slow you down. So you just kind of got to figure out, roll the punches. You made the decision, commit and make it happen. So.
Exactly. No, that's great. And I feel like you said, you can either give up and just let it die and you lose your money, and then it affects, it's like your track record. So I think it's awesome that you as a team gathered and ended up having a successful investment with it. So I think it's, like you said, a great learning lesson to allow you to run to or far, far away from it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're still in it.
Me too.
But perfect, Adam. I think the next thing I just kind of want to hit on is the SkillBridge program. You did it with RAM Partners. We appreciate your service with it, and was curious on what is it and how did you get involved with it?
So SkillBridge is a DOD program now, Department of Defense program, that allows veterans transitioning to work with a company in a realm that they're wanting to do on the outside when they're done, for up to 180 days at the end of their active duty time. So for me, it was one of those, I mean, I'd been a part of Jagagino's, you know, world for quite a while at that point. And it was one of those things that, you know, I had already started a couple of my own companies, and joined another company. So I couldn't work with any of those. And you guys have been so awesome to work with and such great mentors that it was one of those things that just made sense. I gave you guys a call, shot you guys some emails and said, you know, what can we do for some options? And we kind of, it took a little bit of work. So for those that are interested in it, hopefully, you know, all of the work that I did will help you out, because it got RAND Partners set up on the DoD network to be one of those approved companies. But, you know, it took some extra paperwork, figure it all out, get it signed off. And then while on active duty, I was working with you guys, trying to get some things taken care of, getting an active duty paycheck. You guys got free labor out of me. So it worked out really well for me to kind of get an understanding of how this stuff works full time, you know, how many phone calls you guys are doing, and like the effort that it takes, the systems that you guys set up and all of that stuff, trying to really help me wrap my brain around. I mean, obviously I'd been doing it for a few years, but I was doing it part time. I had partners who are doing a lot of the stuff that you know, now I get to do myself, to help them out. So it was really, really helpful for me to kind of understand how you guys' systems and processes work and get me into that mindset of doing this full time. So honestly, it's a fantastic program. You know, we've had a few SkillBridge folks work with one of my companies, Active Duty Passive Income, and that was awesome to have them work with us and help that transition, help that be able to prepare themselves for the outside world and get themselves set up. So it's a pretty awesome program.
Yeah, and I think it's, like you said, it's communication on the front end, because mm-hmm. the value you're providing to a company who may not be, or who isn't currently on it, is free labor. Mm-hmm. So it was no additional cost. Like you said, it was a couple interviews and back and forth email correspondence. So it wasn't a huge lift, but it just kind of having that itinerary and having just making sure we go through it together. And I was just laughing at when you're saying like what we do on a daily basis. And it's like, I think you're just on the phone all the time. And if you're not on the phone, you're underwriting. And then when you're underwriting, you're still on the phone talking about that underwriting. So,
yep, basically that's about, you know, like what you and I talked about before, like the things that you don't hear on podcasts about all this. Oh, well, now I got to look up taxes and I got to get on this phone call real quick so that I could find more things about this expense and all of the, yeah, well.
I have to call the bank because the distribution didn't go through, and how to do this and how to upload that. Yep. So there's a lot more accounting and stuff that casually gets left out of podcasts. but Adam, well, I guess one thing I would just want to make sure the listeners understand of when in their program, or when, if they're currently active duty, is there like a timetable of when they should bring this up and stuff like that? So I just want to make sure there's like an actionable time frame.
Absolutely. So within a year of separating, so once you're a year out, you can start working all the processes and the paperwork, and you can get approved, like I said, for up to 180 days. It takes a lot of effort depending on who your command is. Some folks get it done really easy. It's the first 04 in your chain of command. Every branch is a little bit different. They may change it up a little bit, but the first 04 with G series orders in your chain of command can sign it off, and you're off to the races. Some briefings you got to sit in on, and there are some programs that are already pre-set up, they're already approved by the DoD. They're already, you know, they may be a 3-month program, a 5-month program, a 45 day program, depending on what you're looking to do when you separate. If you're looking for real estate, it's a little bit different, because there's not a ton of real estate stuff out there. So you can kind of find a company like RAND Partners to be able to partner up with and do something like that. And again, they're already approved. You find somebody like ADPI, and you know, we're already approved to be able to put people into it and help you out. As long as there's an opening on that company and they're able to take you in and meet all the requirements, then good to go. But yeah, when you're a year out, you can start working a lot of that.
Yeah. No, I think that's huge. And I think similar to anything with these opportunities, the more you're advanced, or the sooner you communicate, the easier it is to get that hurdle, because you're planting a seed and watering it, and easier layup. So I think it's super important to know those. One thing too, Adam, I just want to hit on is, what were your takeaways or learning lessons being a part of the SkillBridge program?
I'd say some huge takeaways were, phone calls are definitely going to be happening. Like, I mean, I'm on the phone all the time anyway, so it's not a huge thing, but my wife gives me a hard time. I'm like, hold on, I got a phone call in 2 minutes. Hold on, I got a phone call in 7 minutes. Hold on, I got a phone call in 10 minutes. She's like, are you ever not on the phone? I'm like, no, not really. I'm pretty much always on the phone. That's how you get things done. But really just kind of especially where I was, I'd say one of the biggest takeaways I had was I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know, again, how to do this stuff full time. So watching somebody go through it, watching the team work through it, getting on some of the phone calls, watching, like, just being able to see that, oh, this is totally capable. I'm totally capable of doing this and understanding it and getting the processes down. And, you know, it just provided a little bit of extra confidence for me going through the program to say, okay, well, I definitely got this down. I'm not, you know, and military folks could follow, for the most part, can follow instructions, right? You know, they may need to be in crayon depending on what branch you're in. I won't say anything about that, but they may need to be in crayon depending on the branch. But for the most part, military folks can follow instructions. They know how to do all that. So understanding that you're just writing your instruction now and figuring out, okay, this is how they do that process. This is how they do that process. This is how I can fit that into my company. This is how I can fit that into what I want to do and write it all down so that it's all written down. Now you can just follow the process, make it happen.
Yeah, and I think it's funny when talking to people in real estate, like, isn't it hard? Isn't it complex? And I always laugh because in the end, you can have a 20 tab Excel spreadsheet. In the end, it's, is it making money or is it not making money? Is it making enough money? Is it a good area? Like, it's, that was always my skill set. Like, I was coming from the CPA accounting background, auditor. I thought everything was fake. Everything was a lie, fraud everywhere. And then like gross potential rent, I was like, this is the biggest BS number on earth. And now I'm like 2 years in, I'm like, oh, okay, that's just what they think and going through it. And so now it's more of that mental model of, can we increase rents? Can we increase income? Is there expenses we can reduce? Can we make money for our investors? So it's been a fun process, and I'm glad. I'm surprised you didn't say be more proficient at Excel.
Yes. If you're the person who underwrites, you definitely need to, like, I'm the guy that underwrites, so I talk to people. I'm like, I've got an okay understanding because I understand where Excel can go. So I know that I only have an okay understanding of Excel, which for some people is a really good understanding of Excel. But for me, I'm like, it's only okay. And then I watch somebody like you work Excel, and I'm like, see, this is why I only have an okay understanding of Excel.
the pivot table is the point. And I think that's too, is like, even if you're not the Excel person, you need to know enough to ask really good questions. And so my kind of cheat sheet questions are, what kind of, like, if you're GP or LP, what's the structure of the deal? Is it a 506B, 506C? Because I've seen on Facebook, and I've seen it said it time and time again on here. If you see it on Facebook, it's probably not real unless it says it's a 506 season cap, because then you can advertise. I've seen too many of those posts where it's like, I need a KP for the sign on this deal. And you're like, what the hell's going on? And then even before, the other question I have is, how did you calculate property taxes? Because if you know those two really quickly, you know what type of investor you're working with. So I think those are two very good ways to really vet a sponsor, a group, or a deal even. So,
and everybody loves calculating property taxes.
Yeah. I mean, that was Adam's favorite part, was calling the assessor and having them not give very confident answers, even though they deal with this every single day.
Every day. Yes.
So, but anything else, Adam, that kind of someone should know when looking at the SkillBridge program or real estate, or kind of any particulars that someone should be aware of when joining this type of program?
I'd say for the biggest thing to pay attention to is this is your opportunity to get yourself involved in a group of like-minded people that are going to help you propel yourself, right? So the idea of SkillBridge is obviously to help you get a job on the outside, whether it is with the company you are doing your SkillBridge with or not. It's designed to help you get solid employment when you leave. So don't be afraid to take the opportunity to call somebody that's not involved in it. Like, it really, again, you could be the one that does a majority of the work. You should be the one that does a majority of the work, right? If you're trying to get this to happen. So go out and do it. Make some phone calls, see what you can do. You're like, if this is really what you want to do, then go through the effort. It is really to solidify your future and help you out. So take advantage of it. It's an awesome program. Now, I don't, like, when I tell a lot of folks about it, even folks that are in the military that have never heard of it, they're like, wait a minute, six months? You get paid for 6 months while not going into the office? I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, they're providing you this opportunity to be able to transition successfully. So take advantage of it.
To be fair, that's what I said. I'm like, for 6 months, we don't have to pay anything? This is great.
That's, yeah, Exactly. And it makes it an easy sell. Like even if, and since we're recording, I won't tell you to tell me the truth, but even if I was completely horrendous on SkillBridge, right?
Come on.
And like terrible, terrible, terrible. The likelihood of me, like you spent $0 on me. So it's not like you got what you paid for if I was terrible, right? So, but if I was good and if you are a producer, then well, you have like an infinite return at that point. So it just makes sense for the company to take them on as long as they have the bandwidth to work you through it.
Yeah, I think it's huge is because you never know what comes out of it, right? Like the partner, even like the partnership opportunities or, you know, other opportunities further down the line, you have no idea, especially in real estate. When you do these investing groups, the max you can get is like 8 to 10 people just because they're very lean operations. So I think it's, you never know until you're in it. And plus you can really find out what you like or don't like, because there's the raising money, property management, like there's and fundraising, like there's only very few niches that you can really find. And what better way to pretty much see what you can do and what you like and don't like, and really just play that skill. Cool. Well, Adam, I appreciate you coming on. I always ask, what is your one, or ask our guests, what is your one investor pro tip?
So there's a book that I recently read that I really like that I've thought about giving out to my investors. And it works really well, whether you're an active or a passive investor. The Hands-Off Investor by Brian Burke. I do highly recommend that for sure. If I recall correctly, he's actually going to the Multifamily Mastery.
Not a plug,
but yeah, the book was fantastic. So if you are an active investor like I am, that it really kind of helps you understand what passive investors are looking for and how to kind of turn yourself into the best active investor you can so that you can get the LPs to really understand what's going on. And if you're an LP, it really helps you understand how to vet the GP. So it was a pretty solid book that was fresh on my brain.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity because as a passive investor, you should know it. And it's a GP. It's like, here's the cheat sheet, like you said. Like, yeah. All right, I should know all of these questions and answers. Yep. So no, that's great. I appreciate it, Adam, for not only being on the podcast, but being part of the SkillBridge program with us. It was great working together and very happy that we got to work together in this program and super excited to see where you go on and beyond. But if investors have questions on SkillBridge or real estate or any, you know, Japan related questions, where can our listeners reach out to you?
Yep. So if you are a military type person, you could give me an email, adam@activedutypassiveincome.com, adam@activedutypassiveincome.com. If you're not military affiliated or anything, you can hit me up at adam@ralcapitalgroup.com. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you have and get on a phone call with you.
Awesome. Taking over the world with Adam. One property at a time. But thank you so much, Adam. And if you have any questions for me, please reach out to me at mikeT@rancre.com. And until then, we will see you next week.
Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely, Adam. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Later.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.